my dad drove mules in the mines when he was 12 years old, and then he went back to school for 1 year. At the end of that year, the spring of 1902, the big strike was in progress. His father and his two older brothers were out of work because of the strike. Incidentally, that strike began on what, May the 14th, and lasted for 160-some days. That meant there was no income for the miners and their families, so that was a great test of endurance. But my dad never worked in the mine after that. He became a machinist. But my grandfather worked in the mines all his life, and he had a terrible death. He actually strangled to death. He had miner's asthma, which we call black lung now, and he had to fight for every gasp of air, and we heard a good deal about that.
William Hastie, the last living employee of the Knox Coal Company, who will be honored at the Pennsylvania Anthracite Heritage Museum as part of Mining History Month in northeastern Pennsylvania on January 21st, Dr. Robert Walensky, a native of northeastern Pennsylvania, professor emeritus at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, and author and co-author of a number of important studies on the anthracite region, is someone who has worked with William Hastie and has written a special study that we'll hear about. We had a chance to speak with Dr. Walensky by phone about Mining History Month and how it developed.
In 1999, we celebrated the 40th anniversary of the Knox Mine disaster, and there was a program at the Anthracite Museum in Scranton that commemorated that event, and there were many survivors still alive. Joe Stella, for example, John Godomsky, and others, and Bill Hastie, who fortunately is still with us at age 97, all Knox Company employees and other people who worked or were affiliated. And it was a huge success. We had 200 people up there on January 22nd, 1999. And several of those present, historians, the curator up there, Chester Kulesa, and other people involved in planning that event, thought that, gee, this was a pretty good turnout, and maybe we need to do more of this. So we started doing the annual Knox disaster commemoration, and that has been going on since 1999, and it'll be held up at the museum this year on January 21st at 2 o'clock, where we have a special tribute to Bill Hastie. Again, 97 years old, the oldest living employee of the Knox Coal Company. And then we did that for about 5 years, and then we started having a Mining History Week. We put three or four events together, one in Plymouth, maybe one in Pittston, maybe one in Nanticoke, one in Scranton. And then finally, about 4 years ago, we got a lot of requests from people up and down the area, even from, as we say, down below Hazleton, which we have not really gone down to yet, and the Schuylkill region, which we really want to branch into in the very near future. We'd like to do a program. How about if we do this program? The colleges are involved. And we established this will be the sixth annual Monsignor Curran program at King's College coming up. That's one of the annual ones. That'll be on January 19th at 7 o'clock. And we have a play being performed this year, a one-act, one-person play called For the Least of Them, written by Ken Gordon of Scranton and acted by Billy Herbert, who's a local King's College graduate and who's a very good actor. And Ken's written the play, and they've rehearsed it, Billy performing, got it down to about 35 minutes or so, and they're going to perform that because Monsignor Curran, as you may remember, was known as the labor priest because of his work with the mine workers between about 1900 and 1936, passed away in 1936, after St. Mary's Rectory in Wilkes-Barre was firebombed on the same day as the Good Friday bombings, which was part of the labor unrest of the area. And Monsignor Curran had a heart attack, and he died a few months later in November of 36. So he's in Teddy Roosevelt's autobiography. He became very good friends with President Roosevelt during the 1902 strike, which Curran helped Roosevelt settle. And he's a well-known, you know, Catholic priest. There's a marker to him up in Wilkes-Barre. It's going to be moved because they're knocking down his former church, Holy Savior. And he, of course, worked at St. Mary's. He was a pastor at St. Mary's for a long time. So that's an annual event. Wilkes is back again this year with a wonderful event discussing a topic that we've never talked about, African-American anthracite coal miners. Christine Patterson is coming up from Georgia. Christine, who did her graduate work at Penn State, she's now retired. but she is, had many relatives who were coal miners and African Americans. She's African American, still has relatives in Wilkes-Barre and elsewhere in the area. And she's going to give a presentation at Wilkes on January 20th, Friday the 20th, talking about African American coal miners. And Professor John Hepp at Wilkes will be the discussant, going to talk about what she has to say. So we get these kind of annual events, and we get these people coming in who say they want to do this and they want to do that. And we've now got, you know, about a dozen sponsors. So it's really taken off. We have people coming in from, say, Atlanta, Christine Patterson, Dave Braca, formerly from West Pittston, who's doing a Knox Mine disaster documentary. He's coming in from Los Angeles, where he now lives, for two events, including the Coal Miners' Dinner, our last event up at the Anthracite Cafe. It's actually a benefit dinner for the Knox disaster documentary. I'll be there, and I'll say a few words about the Knox disaster. And then there's a tremendous coal miners' dinner, which I believe is an Eastern European dinner. And Dave's going to show clips from the documentary, which we hope will be out this year. I've seen a lot of his clips. He was out here for a long weekend here about a month ago when we talked and consulted. He's a first-rate filmmaker. He's also going to do the tribute, a video tribute to Bill Hastie up at the museum. And Erica, I know you will be at the museum on January 21st for the Bill Hastie tribute, because you and Frank Tortella have volunteered to read some of the poems that were written right after the Knox Mine disaster in 1959. There were many, many poems in the local newspapers written by widows, written by observers, written by former mine workers as the community attempted to deal with this devastating loss of 12 miners. Luckily, 69 got out of the mine there in Pittston, and it was the last major mining disaster in our region, in the northern coal field. Anthracite is only found in the 10 counties of northeastern Pennsylvania in huge quantities. It once contained 95%, our area did, of the northern hemisphere's anthracite. There's bituminous in over 30 states, plenty of bituminous, soft coal, but hard coal. We have, in our area, the best coal in the world. It's only found in those 10 counties, and those counties contributed the fuel that fired the American Industrial Revolution in the 1820s and 1830s. We couldn't wait for the bituminous to come in on the other side of the Alleghenies in Pittsburgh and Ohio. If we'd waited for those, we would never have had an Industrial Revolution as early as we did. And by the way, the Civil War's outcome would have been very different, because anthracite was the fuel that made the iron and that helped the rails and the guns and everything else that the North used in the Civil War. There's, you know, research about how important anthracite was to that catastrophic Civil War. So we're really in the center of a lot of economic history and social history in the United States, and I think it's becoming more and more recognized on a broader basis.
And questions about coal now resurface as we go along, and we know that there's mining in China, and we read about those awful accidents there and so forth. So it's still a question that's alive, no matter what sort of coal it is we're talking about, I guess.
You know, I think so, and I think that this has been on the radar screen for a while. We may do this next year to talk about coal, the history of coal. I know last year at Wilkes, we did a program on the industrial history of the Wyoming Valley, going way back with the railroads and the garment manufacturing and the coal mines. And PCN, Pennsylvania Cable Network, broadcast that, streamed it live from Wilkes. And I think that's a topic that I think would have statewide importance. It might bring PCN back up again if we do this next year. Yeah, coal's in the news. I know Germany in 3 years is closing its last coal mine. England just closed its last coal mine last year. Part of the world is moving away from coal. China even claims that they're moving away from coal, yet they keep on opening coal-fired electric plants, and China is now the world's largest producer of coal. And like we were 100 years ago, they have the most coal mining deaths. We were the world's leader in coal mining deaths per ton mined or per hour worked, however you wanted to call it. We were China 100 years ago, and you can read about a Chinese mining disaster just about every week. Their mines are terribly unsafe. Ours were terribly unsafe. We had the most unsafe coal mines 100 years ago, unlike the French and the British and the Germans, who had much safer coal mines. Russia's still mining coal. There's plenty of coal in the world, mainly bituminous, which is very polluting, which burns with a lot of smoke and a lot of sulfur. But coal is a real culprit in climate change, and we're moving away from coal ever so slowly, at least among the Western well-developed countries, moving toward fuels which have fewer carbon dioxide emissions. So I think you've touched on a very good point, and that's on the radar screen, and I think maybe you're reminding me that this should be discussed in some open forums locally.
In the course of this Mining Month series, we heard you just say you'd be talking about NOx, but are you talking about some of your current research about the Pennsylvania Coal Company? Do you have a program on that or anything else?
Yes, well, I'll be giving my only solo talk. I'm on a couple panels with other speakers, but I'll be giving a solo talk up in Peckville, Lackawanna County, at the Genealogical Research Society of Northeastern PA, along with a group called SIAMO, which is an Italian-American Heritage Society. So there's a joint program with those two sponsors. And I'm talking about the title of my talk is Italian-American Mine Workers in the Northern Anthracite Field between 1896 and 1936. Because as you may know, my latest co-authored book with Bill Hasty, Anthracite Labor Wars, deals with, in large part, Italian-American mine workers and their resistance against especially the Erie Coal Companies, owned by the Erie Railroad, who the Erie Coal Companies decided to hire and bring in organized crime to mine its coal. They leased numerous mines and collieries to known organized criminals in the Pittston area. And why did the big Wall Street and why did the big Erie Railroad, who owned the Pennsylvania Coal Company and other coal companies, why did they want to lease out their mines and subcontract their mines to the mob? Because they knew that the mob would, A, break the mine workers' union or corrupt it, and, B, pillage the coal because they wanted more productivity. This actually started in the 19-teens and continued into the 20s and the 30s. The mine workers fought it for 30 years, hence Anthracite Labor Wars, the title of the book, published in 2013. And the mine workers lost. Renato Capellini was one of the great leaders of the mine workers, but it was not just the Italians. The Italians were among the leaders. Jimmy Musto was former Senator Raphael Musto's father, was one of the early leaders of the Italian community. But remember, we had 26 ethnic groups around, and it was multi-ethnic. Tom Maloney of Wilkes-Barre becomes the leader of this protest movement in the 1930s, and Tom Maloney, his reward for that was a bomb on April 6th, 1936, when he opened a cigar box and it blew up and it killed Tom Maloney and his young son, Tom Jr. And that was kind of the end of the labor wars around here. And then all the mines went leasing and the pillaging continued. And this led to the Knox mine disaster because the Knox Coal Company did have organized crime affiliations among its ownership. And it took all kind of chances, mined illegally, did what they could. And that was the end of mining, really, in the Wyoming Valley, for the most part, overwhelming part in 1959. So that's the book that we wrote, Bill Hasty and I wrote, and I'll be talking all about that. And this is a case where the Italian-American mine workers were the leaders against the mob, who were hired by the big coal company, the big New York coal company. And you don't hear a story often about how the Italian-American workers or even, the individuals, immigrants, we're really among the heroes who fought the good fight but lost. We tend to too often think of Italian Americans as mobsters. We only hear that narrative, but there's another narrative. It was against the companies, in favor of the workers, in favor of the environment, fairness, and those kinds of things. It's a narrative that we, I think, need to reestablish, just like we reestablished the narrative that the history of our area is a really important history, not one that we should run away from. Our industrial history is as good as anybody's industrial history. That's one that we need to acknowledge and embrace.
Robert Wolensky, Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, author and co-author of a number of important studies on the Anthracite region, speaking with us about Mining History Month. Mining History Month in northeastern Pennsylvania, a regional observance taking place between January 7th and the 29th. There will be programs in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Pittston, Plymouth, Dallas, Peckville, and Ashley. The annual event focuses on the anthracite industry here, including mine workers, their families, and communities. The public is invited to attend these events. They're free of charge, and they are sponsored by a wide range of historical and educational organizations in the region. For example, you may have heard Maxime Furyk on Art Scene earlier.
Sunday, January 8th at 7, Maxime Furyk will present a program titled The Shepton Mine Disaster, August 1963, and that's hosted by the Plymouth Historical Society at the Borough Building, 162 West Shawnee Avenue in Plymouth. Wyoming Seminary Lower School will host a program with Clark Switzer and Tom Soupy Jr., Scratching the Surface, a chapter in the anthracite mining history of northeastern Pennsylvania. That's Thursday, January 12th at 7. We heard Dr. Walensky talking about the annual Monsignor John J. Curran presentation. This time it's a one-act play for the least of them, and that's Thursday, January 19th at 7 in the evening at King's College in Wilkes-Barre in Burke Auditorium. And then we heard, too, about the Saturday, January 21st program at the Anthracite Heritage Museum in Scranton, the Knox Mine Disaster Commemoration, with a special tribute for William Hasty, the last living Knox Coal Company employee. Sunday, January 22nd, marks the official public commemoration of the Knox Mine Disaster. It begins at 10 a.m. at St. John the Evangelist Church in Pittston, the annual memorial service, 10 a.m. Then that Sunday at 11:30, the historical marker on Main Street in Pittston in front of Beloga Funeral Home will be the site of the public commemoration of the Knox disaster. And then at noon, there will be a walk to the Knox Mine Disaster site. So much more. The events will culminate in the January 29th, Sunday, 5 p.m. special miners' dinner at the Anthracite Cafe. And for more information, if you Google Miners History Month, you'll find everything you need. There are many sites that are listing the events, each and every one of them, and the details.